time once again to gather around the old podcast box and listen to me have a beer and talk. This is Gary, and this is I'll Have a Beer and Talk, one of those podcast dealies where some white guy talks about technology. I am that white guy, and I'm here to talk about a couple technologies, sciencey, psychologically, and animally news stories that you may have missed from the previous week. But to make it different from all the other white guys talking about tech shows out there, I have a beer while I'm doing it. I randomly select a craft beer and give you a little education about the style, then my honest reaction to it. It's a tech show. It's a beer mini review show. It's loaded to the gills with dry cat-head humor. It's I'll Have a Beer and Talk. Hooray. This past weekend, my wife and I were invited by our friend and friend of the show, Dr. Sarah Sunrise, to join her in attending PodCon, a podcast convention in Seattle. We got to see many professional podcasters, they do exist, such as the bodies behind the voices of Dear Hank and John and My Brother and Me. They perform special live versions of their shows in front of lots of attendees. I even swallowed my shyness and attended a speed networking session with other smaller scale podcasters and added some new shows to my playlist. If anyone out there is a new listener that met me at PodCon, welcome to my world of inebriated bemusement and childlike wonder. Oh, and the show was a wee bit late because I was conning all weekend long. But it was worth it. To make the random beer selection I mentioned, I have constructed a fantastical device called the Randomizer. It makes a human-free decision as to which beer I will be imbibing, choosing one bottle from the many I have down here in the All Have a Beer and Talk bunker. Thank you, Randomizer. I have the result here, and I will be drinking Arcadia Brewing Company's Bourbon Barrel Aged Shipwreck Porter, a 12% ABV Baltic Porter. I am pretty sure I haven't had this specific style before. Hooray, new experiences! Porters are an older style of British beer, dating back to the 1700s, and, surprise, they were much stronger back then. Today's porters are about 4 to 7% ABV, and the porters of yesteryear were, had an ABV of 7% and up. According to BeerAdvocate.com, in the late 1700s, some brewers made an even stronger version to survive journeys across the North Sea. This style is called the Baltic Porter. It is dark brown in color to hide its cloudy nature, and its brewing imperfections are masked by the use of roasted brown malts, overpowering any odd flavors with smoky, roasty notes and bitterness. For some strange reason, that origin story feels very romantic to me. Well, time to drink it. Fun secret, I mask the sound of transitioning to my dedicated beer mic by playing a sound effect. And here it comes. Oh boy, as soon as they opened the bottle, the entire bunker was filled with the smell of bourbon. So it is kind of the blackest black beer I've ever seen. I'm holding it up to the light, and no light is coming through, so that's definitely dark brown to the nth degree. It has a tan head. And like I said, it smells a lot like bourbon. Let's go on this adventure together, shall we? Whoa, okay. I'm glad I'm only having a small amount of this one. Wow, that is... I can feel the 12% alcohol by volume immediately. This is going to be a fun show. It has a very strong bourbon flavor. Kind of a very tingly bitterness in the first initial swallow, and then on the back end, it kind of mellows out into more toffee notes. So, again, it's I can feel the alcohol in my blood instantly. Let's see how well I deal with that. Let me get this out of the way first. I first experienced tofu in my teen years. It was a new substance in the household, and I was encouraged to taste it by itself. With the blank taste and bizarre consistency, I did not enjoy the experience. Don't get me wrong, I understand it's not supposed to be consumed by itself, and is a good and healthy ingredient, but because of that first interaction, I tend to avoid it. So that's why, with this story, I jokingly say, "Finally, someone found a use for tofu!" Geek.com reports that two clever researchers have found a way to turn tofu into alcohol. Associate Professor Li Xiaoquan and PhD student Chua Zhen Yang made the breakthrough at the National University of Singapore. The booze beverage is called Sachi and is reportedly tasty and has, quote, many health benefits. Sachi is actually not made from tofu, but from tofu whey, a liquid left over after manufacturing bean curd. Left on its own, the protein and soluble sugars of the tofu whey contribute to the depletion of oxygen in waterways, and is considered a polluting waste product. Not a whole lot has been done to deal with this waste, according to Chua. Very little research has been done to transform tofu whey into edible food and beverage products, so I decided to take up the challenge of producing an alcoholic beverage using the whey. By adding sugar, acid, and yeast to some freshly squeezed tofu whey and letting it simmer for a while, and by a while I mean about 3 weeks, it becomes a 7 to 8% ABV drink that is enriched with antioxidants. They also alter the, quote, strong beany odor of the tofu whey by, quote, employing biotransformation methods. Sounds fun. Making the sachi sweet with fruity and floral notes. Sounds like some beers I've had. Chua even remarked that, quote, the drink turned out to be tasty, which was a pleasant surprise. Yeah, I'm glad it was tasty and didn't taste like bean juice. Of course, the duo has filed a patent on their fermentation process and are currently looking for partners in the alcoholic beverage industry to release the tofu juice to the public, the thirsty for new boozes. Which includes me. I'll try it. As I may have mentioned recently in shows past, I recently changed jobs, leaving a position I had held for almost 10 years for a shiny new one that I really, really like. I am in an environment very conducive to me being quite productive, but if I were allowed to dress like my fictional hero, I might be even more productive. At least that's my takeaway after reading this story on io9.com. An abstract was recently published detailing the results of a small study from Hamilton College's Rachel E. White and University of Minnesota's Emily Prager and Catherine Schaefer. They brought together a group of 180 children between the ages of 4 and 6 and divided them into three groups. Each group was instructed to complete a, quote, boring task on a computer in their individual classrooms, and were told that if the boredom they experienced while working on the task became too much to bear, they could play with an iPad that was put in the classroom. The control group was told to ask themselves if they thought they were working hard while they attempted the task, as in, am I working hard? The second group was told to ask themselves if they thought they were working hard in the third person, as in, is Gary working hard? The third group, and this is where my jokes are heading, was allowed to dress up as their favorite cartoon character or superhero, and ask themselves if they thought they, as the character, was working hard in the third person. As in, is Gojira working hard? Unsurprisingly, each group of children spent way more time playing on the iPad than working on the task, but the costumed children, quote, performed markedly better than their peers. The small study seems to indicate that the children's actual performance rose if they were allowed to distance themselves from their actions. From the abstract, children who impersonated an exemplar other, in this case a character, such as Batman, spent the most time working. So those that dressed as a character with positive traits worked even longer and harder than the rest. The title of the abstract is just simply the best. The Batman Effect, Improving Perseverance in Young Children. I know that the study was small, and this might only work with children of a young age, but, you know, screw it. This needs to be tested with adults, right now. And, well, I am aware that my preferred character, Gojira, is sometimes considered a villain, but Gojira will always be a hero to me, regardless. History shows again and again how nature points out the folly of man. Gotcha. Gizmodo reports that Draper Labs, with co-funding from NASA, yes, that NASA, is tackling a problem that astronauts probably hope they'll never have to experience, becoming so completely disoriented while spacewalking that they don't know where their spaceship or space station is and can't find their way back. They are designing an emergency system that could be incorporated into spacesuits, one that can pinpoint its wearer's location while floating in space, in relation to their point of origin, and always calculate a return trajectory, taking into account clearance around other objects, time, resources such as oxygen and fuel, and most importantly, safety. Space systems engineer at Draper, Kevin Duda, had this to say, "Giving astronauts a sense of direction and orientation in space is a challenge because there is no gravity and no easy way to determine which way is up and down. Our technology improves mission success in space by keeping the crew safe." The system will provide the wearer with orientation cues and, if needed, directions via a heads-up display in the helmet, and is also designed to operate an external jetpack autonomously, either initiated by the wearer, the crew aboard the astronaut space station or mothership, or even Earth-based ground control. So I guess in the future, if I ever get lost in space after a few space beers, like, say, during the journey from Earth to my retirement base on the moon, I just need to activate the system and sing to myself, "I'm feeling very still, and I think my spacesuit knows which way to go." Hey, new listeners, who I'm assuming are listening, what do you think so far? Pretty weird show, right? Well, hang on, it's about to get weirder. This is probably the only tech and beer podcast sponsored by a handmade paper-making studio. And I'm not talking about any old handmade paper-making studio, no siree. I am talking about Pulp and Decal, Portland's only community handmade paper-making studio. Its mission is to keep the art of paper-making alive with workshops, demonstrations, creating and selling beautiful handmade paper products, and working with artists in creating all styles of art through the medium of paper-making. Browse a rotating selection of papermaking workshops, inquire about custom orders, take an online recycled papermaking class, and check out all the amazing things we do with the ancient art of papermaking by visiting pulpanddecal.com. That is pulpanddecal.com. Mention I'll have a beer and talk, and we might give you something special. Ah, robots. I know I've talked about several different ways robots are being taught skills that will eventually allow them to steal all of our jobs, but all require a certain amount of technical finesse. What would you say if I told you that you could help teach a robot to steal your job by physically moving it when it isn't doing it properly, and it would learn from that interaction? It's true, and I read about it on Engadget. Normally, when a robot that has been programmed to respond to human physical contact, if it is carrying out programmed or learned actions and a human interrupts its movements, say by nudging the robot's arm a little bit more to the left, the robot responds briefly and then goes right back to its planned movement. Rice University researchers have created new algorithms for robots, algorithms that take into account that if a human physically alters their motions, they incorporate the change and alter their planned movements. Graduate student Dylan Losey explains, "Here the robot has a plan, or desired trajectory, which describes how the robot thinks it should perform the task. We introduce a real-time algorithm that modified or deformed the robot's future desired trajectory. They have effectively taught the robot that if a human is physically interacting with it, it's for a reason, and to pay attention to that input and incorporate it into the actions it's performing." The paradigm shift in this work is that instead of treating a human as a random disturbance, the robot should treat the human as a rational being who has a reason to interact and is trying to convey something important, Lucy said in a statement. The robot shouldn't just try to get out of the way. It should learn what's going on and do its job better. I find that so funny, treating a human as a random disturbance, because that's totally what I do. So if I understand this correctly, the best way to prevent a robot from stealing your job is to totally mess with its training. Plan noted. You know about urinals, right? Those special versions of toilets designed for those that urinate while standing up. Well, if you've never experienced urinating while standing up in a public restroom, let me tell you, it's a stressful experience. You just don't know where to look. Luckily, Digital Trends reports that a Dutch toilet startup, which I really never thought I'd ever say that exact combination of words in my life, but here we are, has designed a urinal with a small built-in display at the top for your eyes to fixate on. And while you're looking, while you're going, it will play ads at you. Brilliant! The urinal, called Mr. Friendly, will play 40-second ads while you're trapped by a biological need. Hooray. According to its website, whose English language version can be found at mrfriendly.nl/en, Mr. Friendly is a, quote, unique waterless urinal that provides great advertising potential. Well, I guess for ads trying to sell you diuretic aids, at least. It also says that, quote, Mr. Friendly understands the importance of finding a way to communicate when a person is most open to receiving information. The best moment to do this is when a person cannot escape to do something else and can only focus on your message. This happens seldom, especially in our busy modern world. You know, it might just be a cultural thing, them being Dutch and all, but if you're marketing toilets and use the phrase, "when a person cannot escape to do something else," I do not want to have anything to do with you or your product. Just some free advice. But knowing our late-stage capitalistic world, I'm pretty sure these urinals are being installed in every single public restroom on the planet as I speak. Google Photos has been taunting me this month, bombarding me with photos taken this time of year back in 2012, when my wife and I spent an amazing 10 days on the Hawaiian island of Kauai. We had Mai Tais, hung out on many, many beaches, and even kayaked up the Wailua River, and then hiked through the jungle to find an out-of-the-way waterfall. As you can imagine, it was pretty awesome, and I learned that I like kayaking. Someday, I will be able to have my very own kayak, and after reading this story on The Verge, I totally want it to be able to generate music. A sonic kayak has been created by a team of researchers from Foam Kurnow, a UK artistic and research collective led by Amber Griffiths. The team published the build in the journal PLOS Biology, which outfitted a kayak with a multitude of devices. An underwater microphone, thermometer, a GPS unit, and speakers, with all the components costing a total of $1,133, not including the kayak. Seems a bit pricey, right? Well, luckily the paper suggests some budget version of the parts that they used. So why the hell did they do this? Well, all the sensors work together to record underwater noise pollution and water temperatures, all calculated and recorded by an onboard Raspberry Pi computer and other easy-to-obtain bits. To get regular people excited about collecting data by using a special kayak, the Sonic Kayak uses all the data it's receiving to create and mix together three audio tracks. One coming from the live audio from the underwater microphone, one from a tone that rises and falls based on the water temperature, and the third from a series of pre-recorded sounds and voices that are triggered by GPS checkpoints. In case you can't picture that, I have a brief clip of the music the Sonic Kayak can create here, so let's take a listen.
The stem is ready. Testing left speaker. Testing right
speaker. That was pretty cool in an ambient kind of way. I don't know about you, but I do want one. I keep throwing money at the screen, but nothing's happening, so... Oh well. Long-time listeners should know by now that I am most definitely a cat fancier. I've cohabitated with members of Felis Catus just about every single year of my life, and I was even partially raised by cats. Oh, it's true. So I was a little saddened by the results of a study that counted the number of cortical neurons in the brains of a number of different carnivores, including cats, which hit a lot of my blog feeds, so I'm crediting ScienceDaily.com here. It's currently thought that the number of neurons in a brain indicates intelligence, as opposed to the size, and this study found that dogs have a little more than twice as many neurons as cats do. Dogs are, as far as current scientific understanding goes, twice as intelligent as cats. No. The study didn't just count the neurons in cats and dogs, however. They also studied ferrets, mongooses, raccoons, hyenas, lions, and brown bears. Oh my. And the dog had the most neurons out of all of them. Who's a smart boy? Anyway, the study has been accepted for publication as a paper entitled Dogs Have the Most Neurons, Though Not the Largest Brain, Trade-off Between Body Mass and Number of Neurons in the Cerebral Cortex of Large Carnivoran Species. Doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, but the film version should be pretty damn amazing. Anyway, the point of the study was to see how brain size in carnivores was compared to the amount of neurons in those brains and the size of the animal as well. Turns out dogs have more neurons than all those other species as well, on the order of 530 million neurons, while cats top out at 250 million. And to help you put that in perspective, most humans have about 16 billion neurons. Adding to my sadness, brown bears have even fewer neurons than were expected, so there goes my pet theory that bears have the equivalent intelligence of great apes. I believe the absolute number of neurons an animal has, especially in the cerebral cortex, determines the richness of their internal mental state and their ability to predict what is about to happen in their environment based on past experience. Associate Professor of Psychology and Biological Sciences Susanna Herculano-Hosel explained. I'm 100% a dog person, she added. But with that disclaimer, our findings mean to me that dogs have the biological capability of doing much more complex and flexible things with their lives than cats can. I'm shaking my head. No, you can't see it. At least now we have some biology that people can factor into their discussions about who's smarter, cats or dogs. Oh, yeah? Well, cats have a far more highly developed sense of dignity and shame. Take that, jerks. Hello, everyone! This show is not only supported by Pulp and Deckel, it's supported by listeners just like you! You're just like you, right? If you get value or entertainment from this show, maybe you too would like to support me? You can always hire me for some voice and audio production work. I can do voicemail messages, mediocre acting, bad singing, and some adequate audio production. Check out the Paper Talk podcast, which I am now editing. If you feel you or someone you know might have a use for the best part of my body, which happens to be my voice and my brain, let me know. Email me at gary@pulpanddeckel.com. That is GARY@PULPANDDECKLE.com. Rates are reasonable. And if you could be so kind to rate and review the show on iTunes, the more I have at discoverability will go up for people looking for Beery Tech Podcasts on iTunes. And you can also support the show directly with money. Hooray. If you enjoy my show each week, you can donate at least $1 a month to the show at patreon.com/ihaveitradio. That is patreon.com/ihaveitradio. Go to patreon.com/ihaveitradio and become my patron. You'll be joining a very attractive and intelligent group that already support me there. And as always, to those that do support me, can't do this without you. Thank you very much. I did it. I finished the Baltic Porter. It's really delicious, but I can totally feel it right now. So that means it is time for me to go. Have a little sit down. Well, if you could do me a favor, as always, please tell your family, friends, neighbors, pets, plants, aliens, and Gojiras about the show, and that they can find it on Google Play Music, on iTunes, on Podomatic, on Stitcher, and on Spreaker. And please send me feedback, story suggestions, and beer recommendations to gary@pulpanddeckel.com, or on the Twitters and Instagram at ihaveitradio, or even on the Facebook at facebook.com/ihaveitradio. It's time for me to go. I will see you in the future. Bye-bye!